Well, hello, everyone. It sure is great to be back. Boy, it seems like I haven't talked to you folks in weeks. Well, actually, I haven't talked to you in weeks. My name is Carla Wills Brandon, and this is A Walk to the Other Side. I don't know how many of you know this, but if you've gone to the BBS website, you've noticed that BBS has been working really hard at relocating their headquarters. So, of course, there have been problems with getting things set up and just getting back on the air, getting grounded again. So here we are. We are finally back on the air. Tonight was my son's 12-year-old. He's 12 years old today. He had his birthday. And so we just got through stuffing our faces. My sister came over. She's an old Santa Cruz hippie. And then my oldest son was here with his friend, and they just took off to the Acoustic Cafe, where my son's friend is a musician. So, and my youngest is sitting here playing with some of his birthday presents. So we're comfy and we're happy and we're really welcome. We really welcome you and are glad that you could join us. For those of you who are first-time listeners, it's important for you to know that this is a show that takes a closer look at life and why we are here and life in the spiritual realm. I'm not one of those folks who just focuses in on life after death. I think it's all one big, long journey. I'll tell you a cute story real quick. I'm in clinical practice. I've been in clinical practice as a therapist for over 20 years and work extensively with severe trauma. I work with individuals who have experienced trauma in the military, or they have been abused in one way or another, or with the World Trade Center. We were, my husband and I, he's also a clinician, we were involved with some of that. And last month was the 20-year anniversary for the Challenger explosion, which took place in Florida, and we worked flight medicine for that. So we do a lot of trauma work, and I had a client who came in. She came in, and she sat down, and she said, "Dr. Brandon, I have some real problems." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I'm glad that you found my doorstep, and I'm glad that you're here, and I hope I can be of help to you." And I said, "What do you think your problems are?" And she said, "Well, I'm real, real worried about reincarnation. I'm very, you know, I believe in reincarnation, and it's a part of my spirituality, and it's very important to me." And as she continued to talk, I learned that she was having problems in her relationships. I learned that she was having problems with her parents. Actually, she ended up coming from a family. Her father was in the SS, and they had escaped Germany when the Allies had invaded and taken over, and so she had been living in this country for quite a while. So she, this girl, she had some serious problems. She had this basically Nazi for a father who was abusive to her, and just one trauma and drama after another, and she was worried about what she was going to reincarnate into in her next life. And I looked at her and I said, "Honey," I said, "you know, what will be will be. I really do think, though, that we need to take a look at what's going on for you in this life. And once we clean up what's happening in this life, then we can move on to what's going to happen in the next life." So I really do believe that it is just one long journey, and at each stop, we need to experience the ride. We need to just be. We need to learn the lessons that we are supposed to learn. We need to open ourselves up to the lessons we are supposed to be learning without hiding behind addiction or obsession or looking for the perfect guy or the perfect gal. Or, oh, I had some woman in yesterday who was very, very concerned about losing a relationship. And anytime we lose a relationship, it's important for you to know that that's a major, major grief issue. And we have to feel the feelings about that. And this relationship just was not going to work. This guy was into computer porn. It's kind of hard to have a relationship with somebody who's having sex with a computer. And she was beside herself, and she kept saying to me, well, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not young enough, I'm not bringing enough money in. Well, bottom line is, the guy, you know, it was easier to have sex with a fantasy online than to intimately have a relationship with her. And she was just obsessed. And she said, well, maybe if I go do some past life regression, that'll fix this. And I looked at her and I said, honey, bottom line is, you're in a miserable relationship. You need to grieve the relationship. And once you're through that pain, then you can go have a past life regression. So we need to really take a look at what's right in front of us, and we need to be focused in on taking care of business and seeing what it is that is blocking us from spirit. As long as I was drinking and drugging, I couldn't be open to change. Drinking and drugging, I've been sober for over 21 years, and as long as I was drinking and drugging, I could not clear away the wreckage of my past, and there was no way on earth that I could get in touch with that spiritual essence that's me. So, for those of you who are out there still trying to find the perfect life and the perfect world, know that all that you need to really do right now at this moment is just recognize where your butt is. Right now, my fanny is sitting here on this chair, and I'm in the here and now, and I'm talking to you, and that's what's important. Talking about illusion, did anyone see the Oscars? Oh, good grief. It seems like Hollywood is trying to, I have to get on my soapbox again. Hollywood is working very hard at giving us sort of the packaged viewpoint of spirituality. And for over 20 years, I have been investigating what are called the departing visions of the dying. Visions where the individual is getting close to passing and all of a sudden they have visitations from deceased relatives or friends who have gone on before them. And I've been in the room with the dying when they've had these experiences, and they're very, very real. I've also experienced the paranormal where I have been contacted by the deceased, and I'm not a medium. This sort of thing happens to everyday people from all walks of life, where they're asleep, it's in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden they awaken and they have a premonition of an upcoming passing. Or some of us actually have a vision. We'll see the person who's getting ready to pass standing at the foot of our bed, or we'll have some sort of encounter with a my son had an encounter with an angel before his grandfather died. So these are everyday experiences, but once again, Hollywood is messing it up. They always mess it up. I saw some show where there was about some guy who was able to make contact with individuals in the afterlife, and everybody he saw in the afterlife was like, you know, all destroyed. They had been run over by a car, or their face was falling off, or they had a stake in their hand, or they looked just terrible. And I'm going to tell you something, in all of the research I have done over the last 20 years, all of the accounts I have collected, which span to close to 2,000, I have never received an account where there's contact with someone in the afterlife where they show up and they got a stake through their heart. Not yet. Any of you out there, you've had that experience? You email me at drsbrandon@sbcglobal.net. So that's drsbrandon, one word, drsbrandon, @sbcglobal.net. You've had an experience, you've seen a deceased loved one who's been in a car wreck or who has had some traumatic passing, and they have come to you in a traumatic state, I hear about it. In my experience, I have not experienced that. But Hollywood's telling us that's what it looks like. And when I was watching the Oscars, I thought, well, holy cow, talk about illusion. Two of my books are on food addictions. My earlier books before I began doing the research on The Departing Visions of the Dying. One of my books is on bulimia. Bulimia is epidemic right now, and boy, let me tell you something. A lot of those little starlights, they were just talking skin and bones. Another book I wrote is Am I Hungry or Am I Hurting, which takes a look at anorexia, compulsive eating, the need to be perfect, to look like those celebs that we see in Tinseltown. And it was, you know, I watched that and I say to myself, well, no wonder I've got all these little girls coming in to see me in my practice who feel like they're not perfect enough. 16-year-olds who are getting breast implants, don't even get me started. Young men who are coming in and they think they need a chin job or a nose job or some sort of plastic surgery, just not feeling comfortable in one's own skin. I really, really have concerns for the generation after me. I'm going to be 50 next month, and I have concern for those of you out there who are in your 30s or your 20s. The pressure on you to be perfect is overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming, and know that how you are perfect as you are. We all have imperfections. We all have things about ourselves that we don't like. It's kind of like, you know, life is like polishing a diamond. It really is. We're all dealt a deck of cards. I was dealt a deck of cards. I'm 6'1". I have size 13 feet. And those were the cards that I was dealt. And I always thought that there was something wrong with me because I was tall. And I always thought there was something wrong with me because I had these huge feet. Well, to be honest with you, how on earth could I maintain balance if I didn't have feet that matched my height? So the perfection for the generations that are following me, I really feel for you guys. Speaking of the celebs, I really have to continue griping a little bit more. I'm very sick and tired of hearing from these folks just how we, those of us living along the Gulf Coast, are doing. I don't know if there's anybody out there in the audience who's living along the Gulf Coast, but it seems to me that the spin from the news media, it's so political, and the Hollywood celebs who are jumping in there. I heard one woman came to my office. Her mother had lost her house. Her house is gone, not there. The only thing that's left is the foundation. She said, you know, I wish some of these celebs would get off their duffs and either send me some cash or come down and help me build a new house instead of getting into so much spin. It seems to be the politically correct thing to do. We have way too much political correctness in our society today. Everybody has to sort of like on the bandwagon to make brownie points so that they can get their face in front of the camera. It's infuriating. We had a bunch of cousins who lost everything, and the family gave up on FEMA. We just said, screw it. FEMA's not going to come through anytime soon. And the family, we all joined together, and we put resources together to help some of these relatives get back on their feet again. And they did. They got back on their feet. They got jobs. We helped them get started again. But Hollywood isn't the only group that needs to stick a sock in it. As I said, our dysfunctional media is just, I've always had a beef with the media. The media, when I was doing television, they would give me such a hard time. I remember when I was talking about repressed memories for individuals who are sexual abuse survivors. That's a bona fide issue. It really is a true blue issue. And because some therapists misuse that, I mean, people when they're abused, when they go through trauma, what happens is that they take the trauma and they bury the trauma. They bury it because how can we function walking around carrying our trauma right there in our faces all the time? So, you know, soldiers in Iraq who are seeing active combat, their buddies die or they get their legs blown off. You know, they gotta compartmentalize that stuff and stick it somewhere. Well, just because we push these experiences away, that doesn't mean that the feelings that we have about these traumas are going to go away. Oh, I got blasted in the New York Times by dumb little media people who were trying to make a name for themselves. They didn't know what they were talking about. You know, this Fry character who came out with this book, Oprah made him a superstar. A Million Little Pieces. I mean, the guy, he blasted treatment centers that I'm personally familiar with who have saved, you know, thousands of lives, and recovery programs that have saved thousands of lives by telling his lies. Oprah got out there and pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. And people like me, I've never written someone like that and said, you know, you're a buffoon. Why did you push this guy? But he, you know, he got out there and he did his thing and his spin and made $1 million in the process. So, and then the media jumped on it and made a big deal and everybody had to have their say. So, you know, I just get really, really disgusted, and I'm real tired of, hearing from the media how we here on the Gulf Coast are doing. You know, I challenge you media people, you come to my neighborhood, you see how we're doing. Cross the border, you know, first go through Beaumont and check and see how that town's doing, and then, you know, move on into Lake Charles and get a good look. And try and do so without promoting yourself. That would be a novel idea. Then my cousin, I have a cousin in Germany, and actually his family lived in Kazakhstan. They were ethnic Germans who were persecuted by the communists, and they were all shipped off to Siberia, and then they relocated to Kazakhstan. And in the year 2000, when Russia opened up, they moved to Germany. And so he sends me stuff from German newspapers, and I always just have to crack up because the Europeans, they always got to pound on us too. And now they're pounding on us about Katrina. And actually what they're doing is they're blaming us for Katrina. In one German newspaper, the author of a news article went so far as to say that we on the Gulf Coast deserved to be pounded by hurricanes because we didn't agree with their environmental policies. Well, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a ton of sense. I just kind of sighed. So I was kind of surfing around a little bit, the site that my cousin sent me from this newspaper, and I found this. And even though I know that this is supposed to be a show about the afterlife, I do really, I just have to share some of this with you just to, oh, I don't know, get on my soapbox, I guess. The European countries, they really do, it's like they have to tell us how we're supposed to operate in this country. And I have an issue with, I would not go into some foreign country and tell them how to run their business. And I don't like it when foreign countries or people living in foreign countries try to tell me what it is I'm doing. So as you can guess, I'm not somebody who's real keen on what's happening right now in the world in relationship to how we have gone to and try to force our points of view on people. And, you know, I'm very, very firm on that. I like to go to different countries and I like to learn about their societies and their communities and their beliefs. And I really do believe that we need to respect other countries and that we need to respect what it is, they believe is important for them to function as a society, but I'm just not one of those that's going to go in there and restructure them because I think that I know what the hell I'm doing. Anyway, I saw this great letter. I had to reboot my computer. It just, you know, took a nosedive here. Hello, I'm an anti-Bush liberal. Yes, we exist. And you know what, gang? We even exist in Texas. who is more and more concerned about a kind of orthodox anti-American bigotry that is so frequently spewed out of Europe than me? While Europeans have consistently decried the ignorance of Americans about the wilder world, I find that Europeans, the media anyway, have a stunningly warped conception of America. And you know what? I travel a lot. And I can't tell you how often I'm abroad and I get people, they pull me over and I'll never forget being in Scotland and some young woman pulled me aside. It was during the Clinton era and she wanted to know if all of our presidents got blowjobs from their interns. And it's, okay, articles and commentaries often seem to be written by two-year university students who think they have a grand unified theory on the sociology of the United States and its ultimately evil nature. Yes, we are all evil. A lot of folks over there, they think we all are evil. When Germany is flooded with a diet of negative American stereotypes, to the exclusion of the wide and vibrant array of opinions, culture, and political dissent here, it's no wonder that I find the kind of blanket statement U.S. bashing that I do. I have very few complaints about the broader European view of American foreign policy. It's the steady, toxic, cultural bigotry that pops up in the European media. I'm most familiar with the British, French, and German mainstream press. Oh, let me tell you something. I was in London not that long ago, and the anti-American sentiment is just incredible. Everything here is not McDonald's and murder and fundamentalists. Sorry to be so nebulous about my complaint, but this comes after reading European media for about 15 years. The echo chamber nature of journalism is just as dangerous in Europe as in the U.S. If the European press corps want to claim a great regard for tolerance, reason, and respect for other people and cultures, do you know when I was in London, what I picked up, and I hadn't been there for a while, and since I had been there, there has been a huge influx of Arabs, and the anti-Arab sentiment is just explosive. It's so explosive in Britain. All Arabs aren't terrorists. All Americans are not ugly. just because you hate George W., that doesn't mean that all of us need to be hated by you. You know, I read that, and I thought to myself, you know, how can we walk a spiritual path? How can any of us walk a spiritual path and feel comfortable within our own skin if we're being so judgmental of other people? On NPR, of course, you know, we've been getting a little pounded here and there about the Katrina thing. And what was interesting, we just had Mardi Gras, and I was listening to NPR. And of course, on NPR, they have their slant, and I find a lot of times it's interesting, educational, and sometimes I think to myself, here we go again, little news media person trying to get their 15 minutes of fame. But, they were covering Mardi Gras in New Orleans, along with the major television stations, and, these folks, along with some of these other know-it-alls on, some of the radio shows, they were chastising us because we had decided to go ahead and have Mardi Gras. I mean, they were basically making commentary on the fact that it was awful for us to celebrate this holiday when there was so much devastation. What's with all this negativity in the media? It's like I turn on the television, I turn on the news. Yes, report the news, but spiritually, why do we have to be so focused on negativity? Can't we toss in a little bit of positiveness? I mean, I thought to myself, what's the deal with all this massive judgmentalness over something like Mardi Gras? First of all, the cities don't pay for Mardi Gras. there are private groups who pay for Mardi Gras. And Mardi Gras, for those of you who don't live on the Gulf Coast, it really is a spiritual experience. It's a type of rebirth. And the carnival itself is actually based on spirituality. It's based on rebirth. It's based on hope. It's based on community. And there are sprinklings of afterlife tossed in there on top of it. What we do at Mardi Gras is we basically, it's a time for us to let our hair down. But what I saw in the media over and over again, I mean, we're all portrayed as a bunch of drunks who are behaving irresponsibly by having Mardi Gras. And I even heard this from people living in different parts of the country. So what I thought I would do is I thought I would share with you a little bit just exactly what Mardi Gras is. So for those of you who live on the Gulf Coast and you know what Mardi Gras is, go get yourself a soda, turn off your radio, and maybe go get a snack. But let me share with some of you folks who don't know what it is and who maybe thought that we were being very irresponsible for celebrating it. Let me share with you exactly what Mardi Gras is. You know, Mardi Gras has been around for many, many years. It actually was here before, it was around before the Europeans came to the New World. Most people think that the Europeans brought it to the New World. The ancient Romans would observe a circus, it was a circus-type festival. And it had to do with spirituality because basically what they were doing is they were honoring a Roman deity. So, you know, the very core essence of Mardi Gras is based in spirituality. So the festival began with honoring a deity. And then when the Christians arrived in Rome, the dignitaries of the early church, here we go again, we all know this story, they decided that it would be more prudent to incorporate certain aspects of pagan rituals into the new faith. Okay, y'all know about this. Y'all know about how early Christianity, what they did is they wanted to convert the pagans. These people, and as I have shared with you time and time again, the pagan religion is a bona fide religion. I'm a true believer that if you've got a religion and it works for you, by God, I'm going to respect it. It's working for you, and if it provides you with a foundation and if it provides you with comfort, I'm going to respect your religion. But you know what? I'm going to expect you to respect mine. I'm going to expect you to respect mine, too. But anyway, as we all know, early Christianity, and they came in, and what they did is they kind of dumped Christian holidays right on those pagan holidays, you know, thinking that this would help those pagans who needed to be converted in their mind, transition from the pagan religion to Christianity. And so, basically, the Christian interpretation to the ancient custom of carnival became a time to just let your hair down and get as wild as you wanted to before Lent. So, and as most of you know who are either Catholics or who have studied religion, it's a penance period where I just talked to my sister. She works for the Catholic Church, and she was talking about how all the priests are eating fish, and she's the chef for one of the main dioceses over here, and she was talking about how she's having to come up with a lot of fish dishes. So for 40 days, people pay some sort of penance, kind of a way of atoning for their sins, reminding them that this is a holy time. You know, ritual is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Seriously. You know, a lot of people are anti-ritual and religion. When I say certain prayers that are related to my religion, you know, I don't look at it as some sort of rote thing that I'm doing out of fear of what other people are going to think of me. What it does is it makes me focus. It's like a form of meditation. It forces me to get focused away from what's going on in my everyday life and focus in on my spirituality and my contact with my concept of spirit or a higher power or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, during the ancient times, I mean, the feasting lasted for several days, and the participants, they would indulge in all sorts of madness. And you know, for Mardi Gras, what we do is we try to be something else. That's why we wear masks. Masks are really important. And we dress up and we get really crazy. I've got several bizarre Mardi Gras outfits. And what they were doing is they were basically giving themselves up to the gods that they believed in. This was their way of connecting to their concept of the gods. But all aspects of pleasure, the whole kit and caboodle gang, were allowable during carnival celebration. And, of course, you know, from Rome, the celebrations spread, good old word of mouth, spread to all the other European countries. And so right through the medieval times, this type of festival behavior continued. But what happened was the monarchs and the lords, what they did is they threw the parties. And then they put their spin on it. You know, not only was it about Lent, but it was a time to knight new knights into service, and it was a time to for the gentry to go around the countryside and reward the peasants. And they would reward the peasants with cake. I mean, we have what's called a king cake. Oh, it's delicious to die for, especially if you get it from New Orleans, which we celebrate with, and to reward them with coins. And, of course, for Mardi Gras, what happens with the big, fantastic parades is that the parade participants, they throw what are called doubloons, which are little coins that are usually, today, they're usually made out of tin. But back in years past, they used to really throw out some coins. They believe, I mean, researchers believe that Mardi Gras came to the Americas in 1699. And it started in New Orleans in 1827 when a group of students, of course, it would have to be students, fun-loving students, they had recently come from Paris, and they were wearing strange costumes and dancing around in the streets, and they gathered all their other buddies, and they all joined in the celebration, and when they were asked what they were doing, they said they were celebrating carnival, and carnival caught on really quickly in New Orleans, which, of course, is into woo-woo and mysticism, and you have lots of voodoo and all sorts of fun stuff down there. And so it just became a big deal. And since then, of course, Mardi Gras has spread to other parts of the country. I mean, I've been hearing about Mardi Gras in Seattle. I'm still trying to Mardi Gras in San Francisco. I'm still trying to I want the recipe for gumbo. But Mardi Gras is actually in French. It literally means Fat Tuesday. And Fat Tuesday is the Tuesday that falls before Ash Wednesday, and it's the last day before Lent to make a total pig out of yourself. So the origin of Fat Tuesday is believed to have come from the ancient pagan custom of parading a fat ox through the street. So sometimes people eat like fat oxes, but I haven't seen any fat oxes in Mardi Gras. So there was just it's carnival. Basically, carnival is Latin for farewell to the flesh. So you just let it all go loose and have a good time. The traditional colors for Mardi Gras, most people, they ask me all the time when I travel, the colors are purple, green, and gold. So all the beads that we throw, I was in a parade, I played some 40s movie star, and sat in a convertible, Hedda Hepburn, I think that was her name. I was all dressed up as a 40s movie star and threw gold and green and purple beads, and purple basically is a symbol of justice, and green is a symbol of faith, and gold is a symbol of power. And the Duke of Romanov of Russia visited New Orleans, and that's where these colors came from. It is said that the Grand Duke came to the city in pursuit of an actress named Lyda Thompson. During his stay, he was given the honor of selecting the official Mardi Gras colors by the crew of Rex. And so these colors, basically, they were the colors from the House of Romanov. And so the Rex Parade, the crews are folks who, they're the ones who put on Mardi Gras. And, of course, these crews, they build these incredible, these absolutely to die for incredible floats. But to be honest with you, gang, Mardi Gras gave many of us living on the Gulf Coast a chance to throw off our distress and our sadness and our loss and our frustration. So to all the little media people who have been spinning the hurricane stories in order to gain their 15 minutes of fame, I say to all of you guys, get out of yourselves long enough to really see the whole picture. We needed Mardi Gras. We seriously needed Mardi Gras this year. I mean, there was a woman who just really, really was devastated by some of the losses that she experienced. And I found her drunk on the street, gang. She was absolutely blasted. She couldn't even see straight. And she was going on and on about her losses and how sad she was and what was she going to do. And she was with somebody who was obviously out to take advantage of her. And so what I did is I grabbed her and took her to my garage apartment and let her sleep it off. And when she awoke, we talked a little bit and did some brainwarming, and I think she has some direction, and I hope that she finds her way. And, yeah, of course we have drunks at Mardi Gras, but as I said, we also have some mysticism. And believe it or not, the mysticism and the drunks, they can go hand in hand during Carnival. Actually, I found this one really, really interesting news item that's related to Mardi Gras on About Paranormal. My buddy had put this article up that talks about a premonition somebody had at Mardi Gras. It seems like people, they seem to be more in touch with the afterlife and spirit and their spiritual side, and I don't know if it's because, it could be because of the alcohol, yeah. But I also think that when we can abandon ourselves and step away from what society thinks of us or thinks, how society thinks we should be, when we can free ourselves up from those prisons, and we build those prisons, gang, you know, if I'm real obsessed with what you're thinking of me, I'm going to be so obsessed in thinking about that that I'm going to lose my ability to be spontaneous. And when I lose my ability to be spontaneous and I'm walling myself up, I can't let spirit in. I can't have those experiences where all of a sudden I'm hearing the voice of my friend who recently passed away from AIDS, and he's laughing. He's just laughing because he's so surprised to see that there is an afterlife. Or I can't have that quick vision of my friend who actually was a medium. She was very into automatic writing, and that's how she did her work as a medium. And I had this sudden vision of her flying free. And she had had such physical problems, and she was flying free, and she was so glad to be released from her body. You know, if I'm obsessed with societal things to such an extent that it blocks me off from me, if I become so obsessed with the politics of our country and distract on that and don't take care of what is going on with me and don't take care of what's going on in my own backyard, man, I'm going to lose spirit. I am. And that's what I'm seeing happening right now. There's so many of you out there who are so angry about the politics of the United States, and you're so angry about the war that you're forgetting to focus in on yourselves. What's in your backyard? You know, what? Do you have any kids who need your attention? Do you have a relationship that you need to nurture? What about your creativity? I'm not saying abandon your politics or abandon your opinions about what you see going on, but be cautious about getting so caught up in it that you lose yourself. Because when you lose yourself, you lose your spirit. But anyway, here is this great Mardi Gras premonition that I wanted to share with you. And the guy, he didn't even leave his name. He just, you know, Mardi Gras premonition by H. So, I don't know, maybe he doesn't want us to know who he is. But what he said is, I live in New Orleans and I grew up with Mardi Gras. It used to be exciting when I was younger, but in my early 20s, I got pretty tired of all the traffic, tourists, inflated prices, etc. So I stopped going to the parades. I got to tell you something. My front yard becomes a parking lot at Mardi Gras. But I have a blast. I still go to all the parades. I'm just a little kid. I love seeing the floats and I love watching the people. A couple of years ago, however, I got a bit of momentary carnival spirit and decided that I might actually like to go out on Fat Tuesday. While pondering which of my friends I thought I might like to go with, I decided it would be fun to go with my buddy Paul. He always had a good time every year. No sooner had I considered him as an option than I had a flash of him getting arrested for smoking pot in Pirates Alley, a narrow alley along St. Louis Cathedral in the French Quarter. How many of you have had a premonition like that? A detailed premonition. And you have blown it off. You've had a premonition. You've even in your mind's eye seen the scene get played out. And you blow it off. And you say, oh, I have an overactive imagination. Or, oh, I'm just making all this stuff up. That's spirit trying to contact you. That's your angels bopping you on the head and saying, hey, pay attention to me. Pay attention. I'm going to give you some information that might help you or somebody else out on down the line. But how many of you blow it off? Now, I've seen Paul smoke publicly. I'm kind of assuming that Paul likes to smoke a lot of dope. I may be wrong, but that's kind of what I'm getting. And he's never had any problems with the law, so I don't even know why I had that thought. I decided it was just silly, okay, and my Mardi Gras spirit was gone again within minutes. So I stayed home watching TV on the big day, Fat Tuesday, and then I got in bed a little after midnight. 30 minutes later, my phone rang. It was a collect call from prison. From Paul, asking me to bail him out. I asked him what on earth had happened, and he said he'd gotten busted for smoking. I asked him where he was, and he said Pirates Alley. See how specific this guy's premonition was? And he blew it off. Suddenly, my vision replayed in my mind, and I realized it wasn't just silly, it was a premonition. What I want you to do for the next week is I want you to pay attention to any premonitions that you have or any thoughts that come up that might be about future events. Now, some folks say to me, well, you know, I'm going to have these visions of my child who's learning how to drive, and I'm going to have visions of them driving their car into the ditch, and they're going to end up on the side of the freeway dead. No, I'm not talking about that sort of stuff. That's called mother worry or boyfriend worry or girlfriend. That's called worry wart behavior. I'm talking about those strange thoughts that pop into your head that seem to come out of nowhere that have to do with future events. Just start writing them down. I had a premonition about a friend of mine that something was going to happen to him, and I didn't know what was going to happen to him. He was in really good health. He seemed to be in a happy place. He seemed to be doing okay. Everything at home was fine. But what I did is I wrote it down on my calendar. had strange thought about so-and-so. A week later, the guy had a stroke. So, you know, just start writing some of this stuff down. So anyway, here we have this guy who had this premonition, and of course he just sort of ignored it. As I said, you know, the communities along the Gulf Coast, they're, you know, slowly coming back to life, and in spite of Katrina, people are getting out there and being paranormal, gang. Last year, there was a guy who got some great ghost film. He's a psychic. Mickey of Miami is his name. So I guess if you want to Google him, just Google psychic Mickey of Miami, because you really do have to see these pictures that I found. They're just absolutely fabulous. You know, we've talked a little bit about how we can take pictures of, you know, if you live in a house and the house feels kind of funny, if your intuition says something feels strange about this house, take some pictures. Go around and take some pictures and see what you get on film. Taking pictures at cemeteries, sometimes we can get orbs on film. I love taking pictures of old houses. If any of you want to see some of my photos online, I was at Rose Hall in Jamaica. I love going back there, and I go to Rose Hall. Rose Hall was owned by a woman who was brutally vicious to her slaves. She was married three times. The belief is she murdered all three. And that house, it just has a wicked feeling when I go into it. And I've taken pictures in there before, and I've gotten some very, very strange stuff on film. But all you have to do is just plug my name in, Carla Will Brandon, Rose Hall, and you'll find the site pretty easy. But anyway, this Mickey person, I'm looking at these photos. They're just actually, they're absolutely fantastic. This guy, there are vortexes on his photographs, streams of light that aren't related to, it's a parade. It's actually the crew of Mid-City. The Mid-City Parade is one of the biggie parades in New Orleans during Mardi Gras. And so this guy was out there, and he was just, you know, taking some pictures. And what he came up with is, he spirits, like I'm looking right now at these pictures, you know, they do have some, they have a bit of a shape to them. Lots of vortexes, lots of interesting images on these. The crew of Mid-City, it's the fifth oldest parade in New Orleans, Mardi Gras, and it was founded in 1933. And what Mickey says is, I do not believe that the age of the parade is why it's haunted. He believes the parade itself is haunted. A fellow investigator suggested to me that the actual tourists that come to New Orleans bring the ghosts of their family and friends with them when they travel. To a degree, I believe that. There have been cases where spirits will attach themselves to people who, you know, maybe they got some weak boundaries, or for some reason spirit attaches itself. Spirit can also attach itself to pieces of furniture. My sister saw a spirit that was attached to a piece of furniture in a house that was built on top of a graveyard. And so we weren't real. She thinks that the spirit was attached to the piece of furniture, but I don't know. It could have been attached to the graveyard that the house was built upon. But this guy believes that this parade is haunted because these ghosts have followed the tourists. In my many years of research, I believe that ghosts are attracted to certain people. I have photographed many other parades with few results over the past few years. And out of the hundreds of pictures, only this particular parade seems to have a consistency of more than 20 photos, which are not normal. Well, in other words, there's lots of vortexes and there's lots of light. I questioned them skeptically, of course, that is it a trick of light? What you'll find with people who are really serious paranormal investigators is that they don't buy, okay, so like if I go and photograph something and I get strange light on it, what I will do is I will investigate, okay, was I at the end of my film? Was there other sources of light? What other things could be responsible for the anomalies that I'm seeing in my film? That's what a true paranormal researcher will do. Over the many long years that I have viewed hundreds of ghost photos, videos, and heard after-the-fact reports of activities and photos taken by tourists and locals, I have to say the crew of Mid-City produced for me many photos. Well, you know, what's interesting about the Mid-City parade is that, guess what, gang? Well, it passes 8 cemeteries. It also passes some churches, and it passes a funeral parlor. So, I mean, there's lots of opportunity for this guy to have picked up some spirit activity. Now, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, those of you who have not been to New Orleans, but in the early 1900s, voodoo was real, real popular. I have had numerous patients who have come to see me who have a history of voodoo in their past. And I'm going to tell you something. They're not African American. These are Anglo-Saxon, whiter than white bread folk. At the turn of the century and on through the 30s and even the 40s, it was common for whites to participate in the voodoo activities that were taking place with the African American Creole community. Voodoo is a bona fide religion too, just like paganism. And I know that in my neck of the woods where I live, there are folks who, they got a problem, they'll go see the old voodoo lady and she will give them some spells. When I was in Jamaica, I went up to the Blue Mountains and went to visit a voodoo witch doctor who basically what he did, his job was to take care of his community up there in the mountains. There's this huge community, and he was the psychotherapist, he was the physician, he was the marriage counselor, he was the astrologer. This was the guy who provided self-help for the community. And I remember we had to walk. There were 4 of us, and we had to really, first we had to drive up there, which took forever, and then we had to walk quite a distance into the woods. And we got there, and on a tree post, it said that this was his day off. And so we went and we banged on the door, and he said that, okay, because we had traveled such a distance, he would not be raising spirits for us, but what he would do is he would predict our future. And he was incredibly serious about this. And he gave me some information that ended up being right on target. It was really right on target. And at the end of our reading, he had us go and buy all sorts of herbs and oils and different things to perform voodoo ceremonies in order to protect ourselves and to ward off the enemy and all of this other great stuff. So in the cemeteries in New Orleans, there were voodoo priestesses who would go to the cemeteries and they would perform their rituals out there. And so there have been lots of reports of apparitions in the cemeteries. If you have never, they refer to it in New Orleans as the cities of the dead. They're absolutely, even just for historical purposes, architectural purposes, of course, all of the graves are above ground because the water table in New Orleans is so high that they can't keep the caskets buried in the ground. But I worked with one woman professionally who came from a family where it was the women were responsible for removing the heart from the dead and taking the heart and putting it in a stew, and then cooking this stew and serving it to the family members. And the bodies of the dead were put in the crypt, and once the flesh had fallen off the bodies, they were the keeper of the bones. and they would take all the bones and they would scrape the bones, and then they would put them, they'd put them in a sacred place in the house with the rest of the ancestors' bones. So, and this was a Caucasian person. So this sort of thing still goes on there. So if you really want to see some awesome photographs, go ahead and just Google psychic, the name of this psychic, what is his name, Mickey of Miami, or the most haunted Mardi Gras parade, and you'll pull up these incredible photographs. Also, there's some other photographs that I pulled up. I think these might be this year. And it looks like lots of vortexes. This looks like Mid-City Parade. But go ahead and do a search. Also, it looks like somebody took some pictures at the cemetery, and they got some incredible vortexes. Spirit streaks across the film, blocking the doorway. Solid white orb appeared on the film. This is a woman named Gina, who is also a paranormal investigator. She's got some fantastic photographs. So what we're going to do next in 2 weeks, gang, we're gonna travel more into voodoo and what voodoo really is and what the afterlife beliefs are with regard to voodoo, and is it something we really have to be so afraid of? I really want to provide for you, what I've decided to do is provide for you, I'm going to provide for you a variety of perspectives on afterlife belief. I did my soapbox thing today, and I'm going to return in a couple of weeks. I promise I won't get back on my soapbox again, maybe. but what I'm going to do is I want to give you lots of different perspectives on the afterlife from a variety of different cultures, and there are hundreds and hundreds of them, and I have information on all of them, and I want you to see that belief in the afterlife, it comes in all sizes, shapes, and forms, and it's your job to take what you like and to leave the rest. So, this is Carla Wills Brandon, and we have been taking a walk to the other side. And I would love to hear from you if you have any comments about tonight's show, which was very disjointed with my computer, which failed 15 minutes into the show. If you have any comments or if there's anything you would like to discuss on this show, please feel free to email me at drsbrandon, drsbrandon, at sbcglobal.net. Also, check out my books, the two books that I have on life after death, which are upbeat. They're not depressing or sad. One Last Hug Before I Go, The Mystery and Meaning of Deathbed Visions, and the other is called A Glimpse of Heaven. Or you can visit my website at www.carla, C-A-R-L-A, Wills, W-I-L-L-S, Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, .net or com. As you can see, I'm a computer genius. Or what you can do is just plug my name into your search engine and you'll pull up lots of pages which will share with you what I'm all about. So, once again, thank you for joining me. This is Carla Wills Brandon, and this has been A Walk to the Other Side.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.